It's Open Air on the Rhythm and News Service of Jefferson Public Radio, streaming online at ijpr.org. I'm Eric Thiel. We've got another great live session in store for you today. Singer-songwriter Jesse Harris is my guest. Jesse, welcome to Jefferson Public Radio.
Thank you, Eric.
You are from a family of fairly successful people in showbiz, right? Your mom is Marie Masters, who was on television for a long time on
As the World Turns. Yeah.
Your sister was a producer for CNN?
Yeah, in business news, yes.
And then you end up in the world of music.
Yeah.
I read that you started out as a classically trained pianist.
Well, I mean, that's a bit of a stretch. I was one of those kids who had a weekly piano lesson with a private teacher who came to the house, and as it turned out, that's what we played. I would play Bach, Beethoven, things like that. But I can't say that I was classically trained. I was a kid who didn't really practice too much. And then I would cram right before the lesson. And my teacher would always say, you know, you have musical talent if you just practiced.
Did you not have an affinity for that kind of music?
No, I wanted to play guitar and play songs. And finally, that's what I did.
Mm. And I also read that you're a fan of jazz.
Oh, yeah. I grew up listening to jazz. Yeah.
Was that something that was in the household?
Or? My dad was an avid jazz fan. So from the time I was born, I grew up listening to Miles Davis and Coltrane and Bill Evans. And
I was reading through a list of some of the songwriters that you have listed as influences, and they're not unfamiliar names. But one name that stood out to me was Bill Frisell.
Oh, yeah.
Who for folks who aren't, you know, into jazz music, Bill Frisell is this very esoteric, introspective jazz guitar player. Why him?
Well, I first saw Bill play when I was 19, and I was just blown away. He was playing in the Paul Motion Trio, and I was really impressed at the time that he was a jazz guitar player, but that all of a sudden, I mean, he's not doing this quite so much these days, but all of a sudden he would throw on a distortion pedal and play just a ripping, you know, guitar, like distorted rock guitar solo. But it was always very understated, And I became an instant fan. And later, I became a real fan of his composing. He composes these very simple guitar songs, and I learned a lot of them, and they influenced the way that I write songs because they sound really simple, but there's a lot of sophistication to them. Bill actually plays on the new record on Sub Rosa, my album.
Going back through our music library here at the station, we've got an album from 1996, which was this your first band, Once Blue?
Yeah, that was my first band.
How did that group come about?
I was going out with the lead singer, Rebecca Martin, and I was doing my own thing, you know, singing, writing songs, and performing. And she was a singer, but she wasn't writing quite as much. And then she started singing songs of mine, and we started this project together, and it was really going well, and we actually had a bunch of jazz musicians in that group. The guitar player Kurt Rosenwinkel, in particular, was a core member of the band, and things just went well. We got a manager and we got a record deal, and we, you know, she and I started co-writing, and this was the first experience that I had where I was writing songs for a singer. So it was really like a real training for me for later on for working with all the singers that I've worked with.
What do you mean you were writing them for a singer? Were you writing instrumentals or just?
No, I mean, I was writing songs for Rebecca to sing. And so that created a new criteria, because when I was younger, I would write songs that maybe they would work for me and my voice or my sensibility, but it was a whole other approach to write songs for someone else to sing, because melodically and lyrically, they had to be something that someone else could pick up and use. Mm. A lot of, you know, I mean, songs can be idiosyncratic and they work for just that person who writes them, but it's a different thing to write a song that other people can sing.
Yeah, and we've definitely got one of those stories to talk about in a few minutes. I also read that you worked for a time as a staff writer for Sony. Is that true?
Oh, Sony Publishing?
Yeah.
Oh, no. No, no. I mean, you know, there's really no such thing as a staff writer anymore anyway. I'm still signed to Sony Publishing, as a matter of fact. After I left Once Blue, after the group broke up, that same year I signed with Sony Publishing. But I was still pursuing my own thing, you know, and any stuff that I've done, it's not really like that.
Mm, yeah. Okay. Well, you've got a new album. It's called Sub Rosa. Can we hear something from it?
Sure. I'm going to do a tune now called, I Won't Wait. On the recording of this, Connor Oberst sings background vocals.
It's hard to be yourself, yourself. If all you want to be is someone else, so take a look inside the glass. 'Cause don't you know that time will pass, pass, pass. You never want to walk alone, alone. But I'm afraid you're on your own, your own. So take a look inside your heart. You see, your heart and mind are worlds apart. Tell me straight, make it clear, I won't wait, I won't wait here. Take a look at what's to come. You say that you're afraid, but you won't run. Tell me straight, make it clear.
It's Jesse Harris live on Open Air on the Rhythm and News Service of Jefferson Public Radio, online at ijpr.org. I Won't Wait from the new album called Sub Rosa. Jesse, there was a period that I was reading about that was after Once Blue, where you were kind of in this place of writing songs and not really certain of the direction and the future and all of that.
Yeah.
And you ended up writing five songs for a friend of yours who was putting an album out. And what happened after is probably not the kind of thing that anybody would ever dream of, or maybe dream of, and that's about it. You ended up writing Don't Know Why, which kind of kicked off the album of Norah Jones, her debut, big-time debut. She had recorded a few things before that, but her huge debut that has gone on to sell 26 million copies and counting, picked up 6 Grammy Awards, including one for you for Song of the Year. Did you have any idea the kind of thing that was going to happen with that song when you wrote it and heard her sing it?
Well, you know, no, not on that scale, but I had a really good feeling about Norah and what was going to happen with her. But my version of that was a different version. It was a Blue Note Records version. I was thinking, okay, she's on Blue Note. Mm-hmm. It's this type of music. It's not pop music, you know. I think she's going to do great. I think she'll sell like 250,000 records. That's what
Which would be a really good record.
It would have been great. And those were my expectations. I thought people were going to love it and she was going to have a great career. I just didn't think it would be on the scale that it was on.
Yeah. Did it feel a little bit like winning the lottery? With that kind of prominence and all of the requests for time and interviews and all of that?
Yeah, I mean, it was a bit overwhelming at times, actually. It was a lot of pressure, too, because at that same time, I had my own group, the Ferdinandos, and we had been making records that I had been self-releasing, and we had just recorded one. I recorded it just like a few months after Norah's album came out, and I was looking for a record deal for it. And then when I got the Grammy, all of a sudden I got signed to Verve, and Verve, I felt, had this expectation that they were going to sell the same thing that Norris sold. And, and you know, but so I just felt this pressure because I thought, I don't want that pressure. I just want to make records, you know. And at the same time, yes, there were a lot of requests to co-write with people. Yeah. And I was trying to do everything that I could. And I went from, you know, this, to be honest, I went from like sort of a, like someone living a bohemian lifestyle with a lot of time on his hands and not that many people calling, to, you know, a totally different experience of life and people judging me who didn't
fancy
know
suits.
Me and fancy suits.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Has it been difficult? I mean, it's been now 10 years, right? Has it been difficult for you to shed that songwriter label as you're trying to pursue a career as a performer?
Yeah, I don't think that I've succeeded in that yet, as a matter of fact. I think most people still see me that way. I mean, just even the other night in Nevada City, the person who booked the show said she really loved the show. And she said at first, you know, it was hard for even her to overcome thinking, okay, he wrote that song, but so what? Who is he? You know, and then she said she saw some of the recent videos I've been making. She liked the music and she really enjoyed the show. And so, you know, I think for people who don't have that opportunity, they probably still have that perception, you know?
Yeah, so it's kind of a continual evolution beyond that.
Yeah.
In terms of artists, performers, a lot of them have this kind of love-hate relationship with the Grammys, where it's a wonderful acknowledgement from, quote-unquote, the industry, but it's not really reflective of how they do and connect with their fans and all of that. Is it a similar kind of thing, winning a songwriting award with the Grammys?
You know, yeah, maybe. I mean, it's a nice honor. The thing that's great about the Grammy Awards is if you win a Grammy Award, it just gains a huge amount of exposure for your music. So take Esperanza Spalding, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe before the Grammy Awards, she'd sold 25,000 records. After the Grammy Awards, she sold 250,000 records. I'm just guessing, and can sell out Webster Hall in New York. You know, it's a different, it takes you up to another level. And that's why it's really nice to win one. So for, you know, in our case with Don't Know Why, it was great for the album to win all those awards because it just, you know, quadrupled the exposure of the record. For me as a songwriter, I don't have any qualms about it. You know, it's one of these things where if you don't win one and you're at home and you didn't get nominated, you think Grammys suck. They're stupid. There's no, you know, these don't. That's not a, they can't decide what's good and what's not good. But then as soon as you win one, everything's cool, you know? Even if you pretend it's not. I mean, I don't buy it if someone gets up there and says, I don't care about this Grammy Award. But you're there. Yeah. You accepted it.
Yeah, right.
You're at the award show. If you didn't really care, you'd be, you know, on vacation somewhere.
Right. Well, I'm sure Don't Know Why has a very special place for you just because of what happened to it. But were it not for it blowing up that big, would that be among your favorite songs that you've written?
Don't Know Why? You know, I like that song a lot.
But you hesitate, though.
Well, I just can't say it's one of my favorite songs because I have so many tunes, and usually the songs that I've written most recently are my favorite ones. So right now, my favorite songs are the songs I wrote this summer.
Yeah. Songs that from Sub Rosa?
No.
Oh, newer than that?
Newer ones, yeah.
Cool.
I've written a bunch of songs this year.
Jesse Harris is my guest, live on Open Air, here on the Rhythm and News Service of Jefferson Public Radio. The new album, not the newest songs, but the new album is called Sub Rosa. Do you mind playing us the original version? Don't Know Why?
Sure.
Till I saw the sun, I don't know why I didn't come. I left you by the house of fun. I don't know why I didn't come. I don't know why I didn't come. When I saw the break of day, I wished that I could fly away. Steady kneeling in the sand, catching teardrops in my hand. My heart is drenched in wine, but you'll be on. Forever. out across the endless sea, I would die in ecstasy. But I'll be a bag of bones driving down the road alone. My heart is drenched in wine. But you'll be on my mind forever. Something has to make you run. I don't know why I didn't come. I feel as empty as a drum. I don't know why I didn't come. I don't know why I didn't come. I don't know why I didn't come.
It's Jesse Harris live on Open Air on Jefferson Public Radio. You've got a new album out called Sub Rosa. What's the name refer to?
The name refers to, well, Sub Rosa means, literally means like secretly or in secret. The direct translation is under the rose. And so I guess it was an old symbol if you were into a meeting and there was a rose there hanging. That was a secret meeting.
Hmm.
And the same could be true of of a romantic encounter. But, you know, to tell you the truth, I just really liked the word. And I was on the, at a friend's house who had a place on the beach last summer, and I didn't have my book with me, you know, and so I said, "Do you have a book I can borrow to read on the beach?" And he handed me this book of 1,000 words you should know. So I was reading the book.
That's a handy book for a songwriter, huh?
Yeah, and except most of the words aren't words you'd want to use in your songs, I think. Taciturn.
Oh, right. Lots
loquacious,
of...
I don't know. But anyway, so I came across Sub Rosa, and I thought, I don't know what this word is, and I really liked it. But it also somehow, like, with this album, we recorded it down in Rio, and so it was sort of sub-equatorial, you know, and so I feel like Sub Rosa just, I don't know, it sort of somehow fits this record and this project.
Nice. And this is number 11, is that right, for you? And the last... Well, I guess three or four have been Jesse Harris, not Jesse Harris and the Ferdinandos.
Yeah, I haven't done a Ferdinandos record since 2004. I've done, since then, I did Mineral Feel, Watching the Sky, Through the Night, and this one, so
yeah.
Five.
And was
an instrumental record, too, called Cosmo.
Oh, was there a change in personnel, which is where the band name kind of disappeared?
Yeah, because the Ferdinandos, to me, really referred specifically to Tony Scherer and Kenny Wallace.
Mm.
Because Tony was the guitar player in the Ferdinandos and co-produced all the records with me. And so I did one record where Kenny wasn't really on it. And so then it already seemed like a stretch to call it the Ferdinandos, you know? In a way, Ferdinandos was really like Tony Scherer. And if there wasn't Tony Scherer, then it wasn't the Ferdinandos. And so, although I did do one record, Watching the Sky, where Tony was there, but it still wasn't really like a Ferdinandos record because it was me, Tony, and a percussionist named Mauro Rafosco. But yeah, so there was a personnel change.
Yeah. Is there a specific concept that you had for the songs that ended up on Sub Rosa?
Well, I mean, it was really a musical concept, which was to record in Brazil with Brazilian musicians. As far as the songs themselves, I feel like the songs, they tell a story of a relationship, kind of gone awry.
Yeah.
But I hate to call it a breakup record. I don't think of it that way, you know. Besides, that's such a hackneyed term. But for me, you know, I'm always writing songs, and so once I have a collection of songs, they do represent a time, and it's not so conscious always, you know. But the conscious thing was this musical project of going to Rio and working there.
Yeah. And there are a lot of guests, some friends that kind of come back and help you out. Nora Jones lends her voice to one. Melody Gardot's on
actually,
the album.
Nora's on three tracks.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And Bill Frisell, as we mentioned before. Vinicius Cantuaria makes an appearance on the album. So you've got that kind of influence going on the album. Looking ahead, I mean, you said that you've written a bunch of songs just in the last few months since this album was released that have yet to be put out there. If you could put out an album of covers, whose songs would you choose?
Well, I mean, I have songs that I do like to sing already, you know. Lately, this summer, I've been singing Neil Young's song, Love is a Rose. There's an old folk song called Dink's Song that I really love that Dylan did, but also Dave Von Ronk and Jeff Buckley also did a version of it, and I've been doing my own version of that. Probably I would do Dylan's song. I might choose another old folk song or standard. It'd be a mixture. I don't know if there'd be one person.
Do you ever have ideas of doing some jazz tunes, since you have such an affinity for the style of music?
You know, I've done some jazz tunes, but anytime I do a standard, I always feel kind of, I don't know, like it doesn't feel like the most natural thing. I've learned a lot of standards over the years, and I've played them usually just by myself, but I tend to gravitate, when I'm singing another song, I tend to gravitate towards simpler tunes. But there's some old standards I really love. There's one called I Surrender Dear that I've covered, and I used to sing some others like My Buddy, and I guess I'd go for the simpler ones, you know, like I wouldn't do Skylark, for example.
That's hard. It's really hard. So what's the next few months like for you? I mean, are you out heavy touring for Sub Rosa? Are you writing
songs? We've been kind of touring a lot this summer. We were in Japan, and then we did a bunch of East Coast stuff, and now we're doing this West Coast tour. We're going to go to South America in a couple months, opening for Nora Jones down there.
Cool.
And I may do a separate South America tour before that, because the album's going to be released in South America by a label down there, a Brazilian label.
Are you still writing songs for other people, or are you focusing a lot on your own stuff right now?
This year I'm focusing on my own thing. I've worked on a couple songs for other people. Nora recorded a song of mine for a film that's coming out next year, a comedy that we did together. And I'm working on a song for a singer down in Brazil named Maria Gadu. Mostly right now I'm focusing on my own thing.
Cool. Well, yeah. I'm so thrilled that you took a few minutes to stop by and visit us here at JPR.
Thanks for having me.
Do we have time for one more?
We do. Let's do Rocking Chairs.
Cool.
Silence romance was something you see. The wind pushing over the trees. You taught me that nothing is free. And lately I wonder, had I been wiser then, would we be there? Still there, like rocking chairs, like rocking chairs, like rocking chairs, like rocking chairs.
It's Jesse Harris live on Open Air with Rocking Chairs from the new album called Sub Rosa. Jesse Harris, a real pleasure to meet you.
Thanks again
for visiting us, and best of luck this summer on tour and support of the album.
Thank you so much.
Open Air continues right after this.